All right.
Thank you, everyone. As Lee put it before, I hope you are refreshed. And Lee, over to you, please. Let's continue this really interesting session.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Chair. And again, thank you to our panelists. I've seen that we've had a couple of questions come in, so we might try and see if we can tackle those first and then keep a little bit of time for other questions. I might remind the members as well that in the pack we sent to you on slide six, we also had some questions there that we posed around challenges, risks, and so forth. So you might use those for the thinking. But let me come to Leslie's question, and it's reflecting really about, you know, in the balance, I suppose, of providing interpretation and assistance without creating a shadow system or standard setting. Leslie, I'm not sure if that was to each of our panellists. I might look towards one of our panellists if they're able to answer that in the first instance.
My name, can I start?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Thank you. So in our case, I think it is very important to have all the jurisdictions make public the laws, regulations, or even interpretations that they may issue regarding the implementation of the PFMI. So for instance, in terms of implementation monitoring, our assessment reports are based on measures taken by authorities that are public. If there is a case that an authority says, well, I have a written non-public supervisory yes. letter to the FMI indicating that they have to or observe the principle in this or the other manner, that is not valid for the assessment because we need that all the instructions or the measures are public. And that yes. helps in order to avoid this, let's say, shadow system, as Leslie called it. Thank you.
Thank you, Joseph. That's very helpful. Just conscious of the time, Ellen or Olivia, yeah. do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah.
I think yes. Ellen, thank you.
If I may, just offer my side of the view on this. I think when you yes. talk about interpretation, you're really talking about human judgment here. So the entire assessment is about applying judgment. How do you control this judgment? How do you properly assess? And I think this comes down to the quality control process. So just take the FSAP example. It's subject to a very rigorous quality control, multi-layers of safeguards. And so we start from a very, very experienced assessors for BCP two or three. The minimum requirement, like 15 years experience and international experience. And so on top of the assessors, and they fully merged with the standards, there is the backstopper. These people, they provide advisory role. They provide guidance. Backstoppers, there is the independent they review the assessments, they change them, and so this is all done. And on top of this, the mission chief of the the mission chief of the FSAP are accountable for the entire mission, even if they're not subject matter experts on FSAP assessments. But the assessors yes. are supposed to document all of the differences between authorities' views and their viewers' views. Basis of their adjustment, how they justify that, what are the major issues? All of these are documented, reported to the mission chief. And finally, the mission chief of my mission reviews all the assessments, comments, and red lines before it's done. And then on top of that, the FSAP is subject to periodic review, very formal review, goes all the way up to the board. Every few years. I think these are the measures in place to ensure this judgment.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ellen. It's very helpful to get those insights. And certainly, Leslie, thank you for that question. Clearly, from the responses you can hear, it's a very carefully considered area to make sure that there isn't unintended consequences from the approach. I may then go to the next question, please, which is from one of our new members, Bi Ling. Hello, Bi Ling. Which is to Olivia, and wanting to understand a bit more about the jurisdictional differences and how are those accommodated for. And I think we sort of touched on that in one or two of the presentations too. Could you perhaps respond, Olivia?
Sure. I think as indicated in this question, sometimes words are the same, but application differs. But sometimes words are not the same and application is equivalent. Yes. So, you know, and we pay a lot of attention to that in two ways, I would say. First, all assessment teams are requested to focus on the substance over form of domestic regulations. The committee, when the committee discuss the reports, there is always this focus on the substance. And most of the time this, and that's the second part of my response, most of the time we are able to make a distinction between what we call gaps or deviations from the framework and what we call observations. And observations are presented separately in our assessment reports for contextual and information purposes, meaning that these are viewed as specific to the jurisdiction, and these are not considered as not compliant with the framework. And this observation do not have bearing on the assessment outcomes, including on the overall grade of compliance. So yes, we make a clear distinction between gaps deviations on the one end and observation on the other end that reflect such jurisdictional differences.
Lovely, thank you. Fine balance as well in that area. So thank you very much. But we've just had the next question come in from Angelus, and it's actually for the three panelists. So again, I might just look to one to lead off, wanting to understand the boundaries between regulation and supervision, because they don't necessarily have the same objectives. I'm not sure who would like to lead on that particular question.
Start, Lee.
Thank you, Ellen.
I'll start, and I'm sure my fellow panelists can join me to offer their view. Yes, there is a difference between regulation and supervision. On the other hand, these two are closely related. They cannot be isolated from each other, and one support the other. And so in the, just take the FSOP BCP assessment, this one is based on the Basel core principle for effective supervision. However, so certainly we assess the supervision, which is the basic elements which apply to everyone, like the institutional setup, the supervisory power, data, corporate governance, risks, capital, liquidity. But when it comes down to something like capital adequacy, we do use the Basel III or II framework to assess against that. So there is a distinction there. But then without the good supervision, there will not be good regulation. So they're just two sides of the same coin. And so that's why both in the FSOP in the BCP assessments. So that's my observation.
Okay, thank you. Josephette or Olivia, did you have anything you'd like to remark there?
No, just yes, to sorry.
No, please go ahead.
Okay, so just to echo to what Ellen has just said, we have a clear distinction, and the assessments performed by the Basel Committee focus on our standards viewed as regulations, and we do not look at the quality of supervision in the jurisdiction when we conduct our assessments. As Ellen said, qualitative assessment of the supervision in the jurisdiction is more in the scope of the assessments performed by the IMF and the World Bank, especially under the FSAP.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, just to complement on this question, I would like to say that we also distinguish between the assessments that refers to the regulatory framework, but sometimes we can take some information regarding supervisory practices just to have a better understanding of how the regulation is applied. But really, we are focused on the regulations. On the other hand, for the level three, we might consider some supervisory practices, but it is very important to keep in mind that our level three assessments are not supervisory assessments. So there's a distinction between taking into consideration how the supervision is conducted rather than judging whether this is a very good or the quality of the supervision per se. Thank you.
Lovely. Thank you very much. And hello, Christian. Christian's just sent in a comment, which was quite aligned to where I was going to just try and cover that up. And I see Isabel's also got a question to come in, conscious of the time, and we do. If we could perhaps just look to Christian's question quickly about, based on your experience, this is to the three panelists, recommendations for the foundation in terms of our approach. Given a different role as a standard setter, I would welcome any insights there. Isabel, I may need to take that question on notice and deal with that later. I'm very conscious of our time, but perhaps if I could look to the three panellists just around Christian's, and then I'll do a wrap-up to pass back to our chair.
Yes, probably I would like to start just by saying
thank you, Joseph.
This is a very interesting question because really this refers to what is the purpose of a standard. So we want to achieve a specific function or conduct by the implementation of the standard. So probably in that sense, I would say that you should probably focus on the level three because this is really. The level three approach focuses on the application, really, of the standards. However, yes. It depends also on your priorities because probably you will also start first with the implementation measures taken by the authorities and then review the consistency and completeness. And also it depends on the level of resources you have available from your organizations or your members. It's a difficult question.
Yeah. Thank you. And that's why I was quite keen on getting that sense of commitment and resource from you before our break. Olivia or Ellen, if you had anything to add there, happy to hear that. Otherwise, I can move to a wrapping up.
Just maybe to echo what Joseph had just said, I mean, there is a logical sequencing, which is first monitoring adoption, then reviewing consistency, and finally assessing the outcomes. So I think that starting with the start is probably a good advice.
And Ellen, were you?
If I may just add, just very briefly, I think this monitor and promote consistent implementation should be a ongoing and non-stop effort for the IFRS Foundation. And it really should take a priority in the foundation's work. And I think so far it has been quite effective with 140 countries already requiring IFRS as reflected in the jurisdiction profile. And another thing is the communication collaboration with international communities and regulators to leverage their experience and their reach to the constituents. So.
Thank you. Thank you. And let me just add, you know, this session is one of a continuation of engagement, both at trustee level and with the Advisory Council. So I can see us coming back and returning. But let me be very clear, there has been a lot of work done by the foundation in this area already, but we're always trying to make sure our approach is as well-tuned and as contemporary as to how other organisations might be approaching a similar challenge. So this has been a very helpful... hello, Sue. I think I heard you tapping away.
Sorry. Can I just make one quick comment just to build on what you just said and also slightly in response to Isabel? I think one of the things we're thinking about, which we think about, you know, all the time, but we want to make sure we've got the most up-to-date and best thinking, is how we best manage the jurisdiction profile. So it partly leads into that part of our work. Is that fair?
Sure is. Thank you. Perhaps then if I could just summarise where we've got to then. We've enjoyed the presentations from our three panellists today. We've heard some fairly common themes about having a structured approach, certainly dedicated resource, that's quite well-trained, experienced into the area, a balancing here of proportionality and thinking about the countries that you're engaging with and the nature of that engagement. I've been interested as well about the discussion on the level of confidentiality and transparency and the balancing that needs to occur there, but certainly the public reporting and the elements around how that can result as the incentives is something we need to think a little bit further about as well. Sue mentioned our jurisdictional profiles. That's part of our public reporting. Perhaps we need something further around an aggregation of that as well, which we'll come back and have a further think of. Thank you very much again to the panellists. Very much appreciate your involvement, and particularly as our chairman opened the session around your involvement at a time where I'm sure there is a huge number of other priorities. So your involvement with the foundation through this council has been greatly appreciated. Bill, I might pass back to you then for the next session, please.